DW Africa Link.
Hello and welcome to DW's Africa Link program this Thursday, the 27th of December 2018. I'm Isaac Mugabe.
And I'm Eunice Wanjiru. We are also live on our Facebook page, DW Africa.
Coming up on the show, police in the eastern part of Democratic Republic of Congo fire live ammunition and tear gas to disperse dozens of people protesting a presidential election delay because of Ebola fears.
If the Electoral Commission, the CENI, fails to organise an election in one or more constituencies, the procedure is clear. We will take into account the votes validly cast and available. That's what's going to happen.
The protesters also ransacked an Ebola isolation centre in disapproval of government's reasoning of using Ebola as a pretext to delay the vote. Our correspondent in Kinshasa.
For the civil society in Beni, they couldn't understand why the decision was made, because they said that Ebola started a few months ago and this is not the reason to postpone the elections.
Also on the programme, Indonesia raises the threat level from its rumbling volcano to a red alert.
For these stories and more, stay tuned to the end. But for now, let's catch up with what's happening around the world.
DW News.
I'm Kai Dombach with the DW News. Protests have broken out across eastern portions of the Democratic Republic of Congo. The protests come after the announcement that voting in a presidential election would be delayed in three cities until March due to an Ebola outbreak and ethnic violence. The rest of the country is due to vote on Sunday. Police fired bullets and tear gas into a crowd of protesters. Some protesters attacked an Ebola treatment center, causing some two dozen patients to flee. The Lamuka Opposition Coalition has called for elections to be held simultaneously across the country.
La coalition Lamuka exige que la CENI retire.
The Lamuka coalition demands the Electoral Commission immediately withdraw this unjustifiable decision and organize elections across the whole of the Democratic Republic of Congo without any discrimination. The Congolese people, who have already been very patient, who have already accepted three postponements and even accepted a two-year wait after Kabila's mandate expired, are now saying enough. The Electoral Commission has just crossed a red line.
La CENI vient de dépasser la ligne rouge.
In Madagascar, André Rajoelina has been declared the winner of a runoff presidential election. Rajoelina received more than 55% of the vote, according to the Electoral Commission. The High Constitutional Court now says he has 9 days to determine whether to confirm the provisional results. Rajoelina previously served as president between 2009 and 2014. The United Arab Emirates has reopened its embassy in Syria after nearly 7 years. The UAE says it wants to normalize ties and curb risks of regional interference. The move is considered a major diplomatic boost for Syrian President Bashar al-Assad. This news comes to you from Deutsche Welle, Germany's international public broadcaster. The first successful, unaided solo trek across Antarctica has been completed by an American explorer. Colin O'Brady completed the 921-mile journey from Union Glacier to the Ross Ice Shelf in 54 days. O'Brady did the journey while dragging a 400-pound sled full of supplies across the icy terrain. And in sports news, Napoli manager Carlo Ancelotti came to the defense of his defender Kalidou Koulibaly after he was subjected to racist chants during Wednesday's match at Inter Milan. Ancelotti was furious that referees did not halt the match despite him repeatedly asking them to do so.
Stiamo facendo una campagna, credo che tutti sono coinvolti.
There is an anti-racism campaign, and I think everyone is involved. The federation, the referees. We want to know how many times we have to denounce racist behaviour before the referee suspends a game. Next time, if no action is taken by the referee, we will stop playing of our own initiative.
The defender went to Twitter after the match to say while he was disappointed about his team's loss, he was proud of the colour of his skin. Inter Milan will play two future home matches behind closed doors due to the incident. For more news and information, please visit our website at dw.com. I'm Kai Dombach.
And this is Africa Link coming to live from our studios here in Bonn, Germany. My name is Isaac Mugabe.
And my name is Eunice Onjiro.
Now, we kick off the program in the Democratic Republic of Congo, the eastern part, where the police fired live ammunition and tear gas to disperse dozens of people protesting a presidential election delay that means more than 1 million votes will not count.
The protesters in Beni say the delay announced on Wednesday by Congo's Electoral Commission makes no sense. Assumpta Latus with more on this story.
The Electoral Commission CENI has said an Ebola outbreak was behind the cancellation of the ballot in the Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo cities of Beni and Butembo. It cited ethnic violence for the same action in the western city of Yumbi. But the Secretary General of Congo's influential bishops' conference, Donatien Nshole, on his part, said that he did not understand the Electoral Commission's decision not to hold presidential elections in three cities.
Is it because those places have a greater risk of spreading an Ebola epidemic? I think the answer is clear. Why did we not ban the election campaign when people were more likely to be exposed and wait? There was strong participation and it was allowed to continue. Why did we not ban people from going to church where priests touched them while giving communion? Why is this only a problem now? There are many questions which need to be asked.
Despite fears of a further delay countrywide, Congo's Electoral Commission CENI insists that the elections will go ahead as planned, apart from the three towns that have cases of Ebola. Jean-Pierre Kalamba is CENI's spokesperson.
Si la CENI ne parvient pas à organiser une élection.
If the Electoral Commission, the CENI, fails to organise an election in one or more constituencies, the procedure is clear. We will take into account the votes validly cast and available. That's what's going to happen, because we're not going to stop everything. Even in the most civilised countries, we've seen in the US that votes in Carolina were recounted.
The election already had been pushed from December 23rd to Sunday after a fire in the capital Kinshasa destroyed voting materials. Congo has some 40 million registered voters who will decide the fate of a vast country rich in mineral wealth but desperately poor in infrastructure and basic services.
Assumpta Latus with that report.
And shortly before we came on air, I spoke to our correspondent in Kinshasa, Wendy Bashi, who's monitoring the situation in the whole country ahead of the elections. And she tells us more on today's protests and the general mood in the country.
Nobody had the idea that this decision can be made. It was really a big surprise. And for the civil society in Beni, they couldn't understand why the decision was made, because they said that Ebola started a few months ago, and this is not a reason to postpone the elections. And in Butembo, it was the same also. People from the opposition, like Moïse Katumbi and Martin Fayulu, made statements saying that they don't agree with this decision because they want people of the entire country to go to the election as it was planned previously. So the surprise was really big, and today people on social media are protesting, so we don't know exactly how the things will happen, because for them, as you can understand, March is really, really far.
Wendy, you are on the ground in Kinshasa. Do you think this election, at least in Kinshasa and the rest of the country, will take place on Sunday as planned?
We are all waiting for these elections on Sunday, but some people and especially some rumors are saying that maybe the head of the CENI will be dismissed, but this is only rumor. Actually, officially, we are all waiting for Sunday for the election, but we don't know. Maybe we can have surprises like the surprises of the postponing of Beni, Butembo and Yumbi.
Our correspondent in Kinshasa, Wendy Bashi, telling us the uncertainty that looms in the capital, Kinshasa, whether Eunice, the election will take place, you know, as planned on the 30th. It has been postponed several times. You know, we've been waiting for this election for years, and now it keeps on being postponed for weeks.
Oh, yes. And that actually is the question we're actually also asking on our Facebook page. And we want to know whether this election should take place under this protest and climate of fear in the DR Congo. We have quite a number of comments here. Palesa Mogorosi saying, I think that after all the postponements and delaying tactics, the election should take place under any circumstance. It's time for the people to decide on their new government. This Kabilaism has gone way too far.
I think he means that because Kabila, Joseph Kabila replaced his slain father, Laurent Desley Kabila. And Mbika Emma says, if the people from these cities, meaning those that are protesting, mean their right to exercise their civil liberty is violated, my take is that the Electoral Commission should seek alternative ways for elections to hold in those cities.
And one of our listeners who uses our WhatsApp says a presidential election requires universal suffrage, meaning the whole nation has to be involved in choosing the president. Excluding three regions from the election is wrong. If there's a security challenge, the election should be postponed all over the country till further notice.
I tell you, Eunice, these Congolese elections are really becoming controversial day by day and hour after hour. Jolin Jang from Cameroon says these are manipulations orchestrated by foreign investors in order to disarray the economic development of DRC and their benefits. Africa is the only continent controlled by investors via preaching of the doctrine of hatred, bigotry, and Semitism. Investors are using strategies to keep Africans under their control. I think he alludes to the fact that, you know, there are so many foreign companies in the DRC, especially the Chinese. We'll come back to this story as you send your comments on our Facebook page, DW Africa. Now, elsewhere, authorities in Indonesia have raised the alert level for the volcano that caused a tsunami last weekend. They've warned that fresh activity from the Anak Krakatau volcano might cause another tsunami, and they've ordered all flights to steer clear of the area.
Now, Saturday's deadly waves killed at least 430 people. Since then, heavy rains and flooding have added to the hardship. DW's correspondent in the town of Ayer, West Java, Anna Santos, tells us how worried people are about the tsunami.
There's definitely still much anxiety about the possibility of another tsunami. Authorities today raised the alert level to 3, which is the second highest level, because they said that there was more volcanic activity from the volcano, more volcanic ash and smoke was seen spewing from Krakatau. The locals that I've spoken to tell me that they are afraid, but resolute. They say that their faith is what keeps them strong. And it is their faith that will keep them, that will see them through this disaster.
Rain and flooding is adding to the misery of the people. How is all of this impacting the rescue and relief efforts?
Search and rescue teams told us that extreme weather conditions remain to be their biggest challenge. Roads are either blocked by debris or flooded. So this impacts their access to the affected communities and the immediacy by which they can extend aid to those that need help. There is more rain that's forecast for the coming days. And as we saw yesterday, sometimes it comes in torrents, right? And then you wake up, the roads are flooded and some of the villages are filled up to the rooftops and completely submerged. So the residents, they tell us that, okay, this happens and they are tired. But yes, still very determined and resolute that their faith will see them through this disaster.
Anna Santos in the town of Ayer, West Java.
Now, Eunice, I mean, the tsunami happened at a time when people were remembering 14 years ago when the deadliest tsunami happened. You know, it killed over 220,000 people. And I remember at that time I was about to host the news and we get, you know, tickers telling us 10 people dead, the next second, 20, 30. The numbers kept on rising minute after minute. And by the end of the whole exercise, more than 200,000 people were dead. Now, this is a story that we'll keep on monitoring whenever we can.
Make your voice count. Join DW Africa on Facebook and comment on the stories there. You could get a mention on Africa Link, which broadcasts live on Facebook. That's DW Africa.
And indeed, the mission is right now. Beginning with Emnel Handovanik. That's how he calls himself. He says, hi, I'm Emnel from Nigeria here.
We also have Yusinu Omer and Alimi Jalo listening from Freetown. And Yusinu is from Yaounde.
Monju Erneus, our usual contributor here, says, hello, I'm from Bamenda. Bamenda, that is in Cameroon, Eunice, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
And of course, yeah, we have someone who says, Yusinu Omar, listening to Africa Link from Yaounde, and so is Alimu Jalo from Freetown. Most of the Jalos are from Freetown, yeah.
Anyway, keep Africa Link.
Exactly.
And in case you're just joining us, you're listening to Africa Link, coming to you live from Bonn, Germany. I'm Eunice Wanjiru.
And my name is Isaac Mugabe. You're also live on our Facebook page, DW Africa. We can see your comments trickling in minute after minute. And of course, we'll come back to them whenever we can. Coming up in the next 15 minutes, youngsters in Nigeria are out in the night putting up posters of politicians.
We do it in the nights because we don't want people to see us posting posters. We normally post posters of candidates on walls of any house that can sell our sponsor, whether the owner of the house supports that candidate or not.
And we will also head to Cameroon to see what is happening on that front. But we begin in Kenya. Residents in Lamu have every reason to boast because of their new public library at the Riada Mosque. The historic library got a new lease of life after digitization and refurbishment project took root.
Yes, indeed. And the site is now a national monument. The impressive manuscript collection is unique to the library. Thelma Mwadzaya visited Lamu, and this is her report.
It is lunchtime, and the muezzin, the person appointed to call for prayers, calls out to Muslim faithfuls to attend the midday prayer. The Riada Mosque is an important center of Islamic education in East Africa. A state-of-the-art library was recently installed after refurbishment and a digital photography project took place. This collection holds several unique copies and represents Islamic education in East Africa for the past 120 years. Abdallah Abdikadir Muhammad, who was a student at Riada Mosque, is now a teacher and caretaker of the public library. He explains why the manuscripts are valuable.
It is our first library in Lamu. It was constructed in 1979. We have poetry manuscripts written by old scholars of Lamu. Those poems are describing birthday of Prophet Muhammad, Lamu culture, and the people of Lamu, how Islam helped. They are written in Arabic alphabetical. So you can see a book written in Arabic alphabet, but it is read by Swahili language. You can take a book, but you have to give us your ID so that we can assure that you will return it.
The collection of approximately 130 manuscripts holds several unique copies dating from 1837 to 1920. The Riada Mosque in Lamu is the longest continuously functioning and one of the most influential Islamic teaching institutions in the Swahili world. This manuscript collection of the Riada Mosque contains works that can be found nowhere else. So, how has the mosque been instrumental in fostering peace in present-day Lamu? Sheikh Abubakar Din of Riada Lamu Mosque believes the answer lies in tolerance.
By bringing together members of different communities to learn together, apart from the formal lessons and teaching that one gets from Riada, disseminating the mission of Islam, and that is bringing people together, preaching love, peace, unity, and discouraging any form of discrimination and radicalism. There is absolute harmony, actually.
The mosque, which is now a national monument, lies on a 1.31 hectare piece of land located in Langoni area of Lamu Town in Kenya.
Thelma Mwadzaya reporting.
U-Zone. And of course, as you heard in that opener, it's time for U-Zone, a segment that addresses issues which directly affect the youth. In Nigeria, politics is serious business. Politicians are one of the highest paid in the world, and they allegedly spend their life savings just to climb the ladder because they're sure they can retrieve the money as soon as they're elected in office. But down the ladder, though, are the young people who earn from these politicians, and their job is to put up posters of the politicians when they have to often do this late at night. Eunice.
That's right, Isaac. The country will head to the polls in February, meaning it's time to post political posters everywhere. So young people post them on public places, walls, trees, and any other place the voters can see. From Kaduna, our correspondent Zahiruddin Umar reports.
It is exactly 11 p.m. in Tudun Wada, Kaduna, northern Nigeria, And these young people are here trying to paste posters, trying to earn a living. Let me hear from one of them.
Sunana Musa Aminu.
My name is Musa Aminu. I usually paste more than 1,000 posters a night. So when our team of four posts about 4,000 posters, we are paid about 10,000 naira for our work.
10,000 naira is about $27. Kaduna is among northern Nigerian cities where the Harmattan season is pervasive, with the temperatures reaching a low of 15 degrees Celsius at night. But these young people defied the weather and came out. Mukhtar Muhammad, a 19-year-old, tells me why they choose to do their business when the rest of the people are in bed.
We do it in the nights because we don't want people to see us posting posters. We normally post posters of candidates on walls of any house that can sell our sponsor, whether the owner of the house supports that candidate or not. So if the owner does not support the candidate, he will not allow us to paste the posters on his walls. That's why we do it silently in the night.
In many instances, this practice has caused dispute among residents who are not happy with the posting of posters on the walls of their houses. Ado Mbu, who has been in the business since 2015, says their job is very lucrative.
The new Honorable Ibrahim Ismail.
The politician I'm supporting has given me a plot of land. He also gave me 200,000 naira and secured a job for my sister. I got these because I'm posting posters for him.
With these glad tidings, young people are increasingly embracing the business. But for Isaac Idris Gubi, a political analyst, the practice demoralizes the personality of the younger generation.
They cannot allow their children to venture into such ventures at all. They look for the masses children, they mobilize them, they push them into drugs, because a normal sane person will not take posters in the night, pasting everywhere. To be sincere, they are cheating this youth.
In Nigeria, politicians can hardly win election without posters. That's why politicians are putting high premium on posters. Laul Buba, a chieftain of the ruling All Progressive Congress APC in Kaduna State, says there is nothing wrong with the paying youngsters to put up political posters.
I don't think it is criminal. I've said it again and I will repeat, it's not criminal. You give them a poster, you are not asking them to go and smoke hemp, you are not putting them to go and do things that are vices within the society. In our society here, it's not criminal. It's just a thing of the time. By the time the period elapses, you may not find them anywhere doing this.
As the young people continue to put up campaign posters all over, analysts say that this action does not and never will translate to empowerment or employment from political leaders. If anything, politicians may want these guys to remain as political campaigners to use them again and again.
Zaharuddin Omar reporting from Kaduna in Nigeria.
Now, Eunice, as you heard in that report, I can imagine a bunch of youth under the cover of darkness roaming around the city, putting up posters for different politicians. Don't they clash if they're putting up different posters of different politicians?
I think for them, it's just business. It doesn't matter what they're putting up.
Yeah, and they do it under the cover of darkness, regardless of the house's owners, political ideologies. That's why we asked, what do you think of this growing trend in Nigeria? Is it ethical? Is it right? And many of you are still commenting on this story. Baya Jeremiah says, they're doing that out of ignorance. If I see such posters on my wall, the person being advertised will be arrested. The youth are now part of the problem in Africa because they are the very people who pick up arms to defend the corrupt politicians when caught. Strong comment there.
Yeah, very strong. It's also difficult because they're doing this and it's cold season. It's freezing temperatures at night. Mm. But anyway, David Miyim Hina is saying, it is vanity and vexation of spirit. Vanity, open vanity, all is vanity. Let the masses unite and the vote, and vote the out for better and responsible leaders to take over.
Wenga Ubebe says, it's an unfortunate development, and this may explain the reasons for the country's declining fortunes. As it were, only a radical revolution is able to break this logjam by older and more established politicians. Keep the debate flowing. We really appreciate your debate on our Facebook page, DW Africa. We still have much more for you, so don't go away.
Speaking out.
And off to Cameroon for speaking out this week. Hundreds are now homeless in Bangourane, a locality in the west region of the country, which shares borders with Bambalang in the conflict-hit northwest of the country. This after scores of attackers stormed the village last Sunday and set houses ablaze.
Now, the identity of the attackers is still unclear, but the incident has triggered a tense atmosphere between the Bangourane native and the resident Anglophone community. Before we went on air, I talked to Mimi Mefo in Cameroon, and I wanted to find out what she could tell me about the attack.
It was actually on the 23rd of December 2018 that a group of armed, unidentified men, they were even masked, stormed to the village of Bangourane. They were moving from one house to another, destroying properties, sending people out of their homes, looting in some shops that are equally in Bangourane. Several shops were looted, and we equally have information that other people were injured. And after the incident, which took place that day, we have reports of how at least two people died and several others were injured. But as at now, we are having reports of more than 100 houses set ablaze by this yet-to-be-identified armed men that stormed Bangourane that fateful day. And there were close to 100 of them in number. Up to now, the people have not been able to give the exact identity of the invaders.
And what is the government saying about all this?
The government has reacted promptly. As far as the situation is concerned, the President of the Republic of Cameroon, I should say that this is one of the most rare incidents that we've seen very prompt reaction from the government of Cameroon. The government has sent a condolence message to the aggrieved population, ordered for the construction of some of the houses that were destroyed. But before that, I should note that there is a lot of controversy as far as the identity of the armed men is concerned, because there was a video that actually went viral online of an individual who identified himself as the leader of the gang that attacked the Bangourane village on the 23rd of December. And he said that he is the one who masterminded the attack and that he's leading an Ambazonian movement in Bambalang. You know, Bambalang is a village in Gokutunja division of the North West region of Cameroon that has been hit by crisis for close to 2 years now. He said he's leading a gang. But Anglophone activists have come up to say he is not known or identified. They have not been able to identify who the said Lovetin is, who claimed to be a leader of an Ambazonian movement in Bambalang village in the Ngokutunji of the Northwest region of Cameroon. There is equally another controversy of individuals who are living in Bangourane that have indicated that those who attacked the said locality knew some of them, an indication that they are people of that particular locality.
I was speaking to Mimi Mefo in Cameroon.
Now, before we continue, a big shout out to those following us on our Facebook page, DW Africa. Princess Musogong Bin Frunche says he's listening and following us from Bamenda, that is southern Cameroon. And so is Ngong, who says, hello, Isaac, I'm listening from Bamenda. Yes, thumbs up to you, Jean-Marie. Many thanks for following us. Now, in other news, Ugandan musician Bobi Wine says his political views have made him a target of police violence. The popular performer and politician believes that the government wants to prevent him from making political statements at his concerts. We asked you what you make of his statement. Eunice.
Agama Richard Okundia is saying Bobby most times becomes fanatic after winning himself to stupor.
I think because there's a big falling of the youth and, you know, he wants to always express his views through his concerts. Eber Nyirongo says, is there freedom of expression in Uganda anyway? If there is, then he's entitled to make his political views known.
And Junju Sham is saying Africans will still have a long way to go.
Yeah, and finally, Mweni Jacqueline says, it's true, everything associated with democracy in Uganda is stifled. However, I believe this won't go on for long. Many thanks for following us and listening to us on our Facebook page, DW Africa. On behalf of the rest of the team, I'm Isaac Mugabe.
And I'm Eunice Wanjiru. Bye for now.
DW, made for mind.